All right. So do you hear well today? Yes? Should I speak louder? Is it okay? Yes? All right. Louder. Okay. So I have been asked to introduce myself, which is a tough thing to do, of course. So I'll keep it simple. I'm Beatriz Colomina. I come from Spain. I went to school in Barcelona, and I now teach at Princeton University. So I was trained as an architect, but I write. So therefore, I like to think that I'm an architect who writes, rather than to think that I'm a historian or something else, which is a different thing. Anyway, so the title of today is Modern Architecture and the Mass Media. It is a little bit of a blanket title, because in many ways, everything I have done can be accommodated under this title. So what I'm going to do here tonight, and first I would like to talk about how did I get into this question of architecture and the media. And I did not plan it, of course. Things never work out that way, at least for me. But I did have an interest in Le Corbusier's early publications, the early, you know, the early magazines, L'Esprit Nouveau, and all the books that came out of that enterprise, Towards a New Architecture, Urbanismo, I mean, it was translated as The City of Tomorrow, L'Art Décoratif d'Aujourd'hui, and all these things. So I started studying all these publications, actually, from Columbia University, from Avery, and everything that had been written about them, about this period, and about the L'Esprit Nouveau magazine. And I was not very happy with it. I found a book that was written by a couple of Italian architects, which are Gabetti and Del Olmo, and was called that way, L'Esprit Nouveau. And I didn't like very much the book, but I liked the appendix in the back of the book, where a number of documents from the archives of the magazine had been collected. And those documents were letters between Le Corbusier and other avant-garde figures, and some documents also about the finances of the magazine and who was paying for what and all of these things. And this was precisely what gave me the idea to go to La Fundación Le Corbusier and try to see what other documents were in those archives, since it seemed pretty clear that they have preserved the archives of the magazine. So what did I expect to find there? I expect to find the kind of things that you have in archives. I expected to find manuscripts that were rejected from publications, for example, photographs that were never published, correspondence, and all these things. So now I am in Paris at La Fundación Le Corbusier, and I'm told that there are many, many boxes that correspond to this thing that I want to study, the Esprit Nouveau archive. And I also am told that I can only have one at a time. So I say, fine, and I ask for the first box. And I open it, and it's full of catalogs from department stores and publicity brochures and all of these kinds of things that we now call junk mail. And I say to myself, oh, well, I got a bad box, the junk mail box. And I didn't make anything of it. So I asked for another box. And again, I waited a long time for the box to arrive. And I have to say that waiting at the Fundación Le Corbusier is not really a bad thing, because you are there in the middle of the space of the La Roche house. And it's a quite beautiful space to be in, so you start seeing things that you had never seen before in all these photographs that we know of this house. So now I'm getting in this mood of more of a flaneur, of looking into the spaces. So when the second box arrives, I open it, and it's very much like the first one. It's all full of catalogs and publicity and postcards and all this funny stuff, but now I'm starting to think, why is he collecting all this stuff? And I start also spending some time looking at these catalogs, getting lost in these catalogs, because they are quite beautiful, actually. You know, all these advertisements from the 20s and all this amazing material. But really, I'm still feeling quite guilty. I'm feeling that I'm wasting time that I shouldn't really be doing there, and that I should really work. That's why I went to the archives. So I ordered another box, and now the librarian says that now it's time to close. The Fundación is only open from 2 to 5, and at 4:30 they don't bring you any more boxes because it's too late for them. So my day is practically gone. My day is gone, so I left. And I come back the next day, and again, I continue to get boxes and boxes, and they are all full of this publicity stuff and all this clipping from advertisements. And now I'm starting to jump the order because I got the feeling that maybe all this junk was in the first boxes. So I now go from the, say, box 4 to box number 25 to see where I have more luck there. And I find all this valuable material that Gabetti and Del Olmo seem to think that is there somewhere. And again, I found more and more publicity. And only now and then, in the middle of all of that, I will find a letter to Gropius or to Van Doesburg. But you really have to look for those with a magnifying glass. The majority of the stuff is all these other things that nobody has talked about it. And suddenly, I realized that after all these days, thinking that I was getting the wrong box, What was happening is that I was looking through these archives of L'Esprit Nouveau with the eyes of those who had looked at the archives before me. That is, I was looking for all these things that we always think that are important, the relationship between Le Corbusier and other figures of the modern movement. And that really, these people that had been in the archives before me and had written about L'Esprit Nouveau had to have made a huge effort not to talk about that material. I have to really repress what it was, I will say, overwhelming historical evidence of Le Corbusier's clear interest and involvement with the mass media. Well, as an anecdote, and before we get into the material, I will advance for you that while Le Corbusier took sometimes 4 to 6 months to answer letters from other avant-garde figures, and then you see Van Doesburg is sending him photographs and drawings that he wants to get published, and he's getting angry because he's not getting any response, and there is all this correspondence. Why didn't you write back to me? Is there anything wrong? You know, all these things. And Le Corbusier just ignores them, doesn't answer the letters. And in the meantime, what is amazing is that he's spending an enormous amount of energy writing to all these department stores and to all these industries to get their catalogs and to get all this stuff. So what is it exactly going on there is part of what I would like to talk about today. But in fact, the lecture has three parts. In the first part, I will talk about this question of Le Corbusier and publicity, about the various ways in which this publicity material, in the end, influenced his work. In the second part, I will talk about Le Corbusier himself as publicist, the way in which he used L'Esprit Nouveau precisely as a publicity campaign for his own practice. And in the third part, I will talk about the Museum of Modern Art and the Exhibition International Style, how this institution that we normally think of high art, that we never associate with publicity, in fact, was very much operating in the terms that we understand belong to the mass media. So let's go with the first part first. L'Esprit Nouveau, if you want, and publicity. Now, L'Esprit Nouveau, for those of you who don't know the magazine, there's a little bit of a problem with the vertical slides because they are cut, so maybe sometimes we will have to move them, but I think you get a sense. This is the first issue of L'Esprit Nouveau, and there on the right you have a photograph of Le Corbusier and Ossian Fan in the years of the publication of the magazine. L'Esprit Nouveau is a magazine, a review, published by Le Corbusier and Ossian Fan in Paris between 1920 and 1925. Is it too dark, the room today? Wasn't it a little bit more of light yesterday? I feel like suddenly the audience is this blank space here, and I'm not so sure there is anybody there. Now, the editor of the magazine was the Dadaist poet, Paul Dermain, but he was dismissed by number 4 amid a polemic among the editorial group that, by the way, ended up in trial. Ossian Fan will later write in his memoirs, Dermain had gotten into his head to make a Dada journal. We eliminated him. So they get rid of Dermain, and now we have Ossian Fan and Le Corbusier as the sole editors of the magazine. And there is a change in the subtitle that you can appreciate here, with coinciding precisely with the dismissal of Dermain, with number 4. And you see that the subtitle has gone from being Review International of Aesthetics, International Review of Aesthetics, to Review International de l'Activité Contemporaine, Review International of Contemporary Activity. In some ways, what is interesting here is that this is somewhat a paradoxical change, because the change implies a shift from aesthetics, that is a specialized field separate from everyday life, to contemporary activity, which includes not only the high forms of art, painting, music, literature, and architecture, but also the so-called lower forms of art, such as music hall, sport, cinema, theater, and book design. Now, why is this change paradoxical? It is paradoxical because Dermé was a Dadaist. Orson Fanon wanted to eliminate him because of that reason. That is, he was an avant-garde figure. And normally we understand, particularly after books like Peter Berger, Theory of the Avant-Garde, that the avant-garde is an attack or represents an attack on the highness of high art and on the separation of art from everyday life that had evolved from 19th century aestheticism. Now, modernism, on the other hand, as a word, carries connotations of an autonomous, inward, self-referential, and self-critical artistic practice. The same theory also assumes that the relationship between modernism and mass culture is one of a continuous refusal. Now, with this digression over the subtitle of the journal, I have now introduced one of the conceptual threads running through this paper, which is what emerges from this study of Le Corbusier is an instance of the involvement between modernism and mass culture. Le Corbusier, of course, being considered in traditional architectural criticism as the epitome of modernism. And by the way, that the same thing also applies to the Museum of Modern Art, in that the Museum of Modern Art, as you will see, was also completely involved with the world of mass culture. Now here you have, let me see, the books that came out of Le Esprit Nouveau. Many people say, I don't know what the magazine Le Esprit Nouveau, but in fact you do. Because there were all these books that you can see here, Versine Architecture, La Peinture Moderne, L'Art Décoratif de Aujourd'hui, Urbanismo, etc., and even the Almanac, that came all out of Le Esprit Nouveau. They were first published as articles in Le Esprit Nouveau, and then collected in this book. Some of these books, of course, are now into English. There was a new architecture very early on, the Decorative Arts of Today, recently by MIT Press, and Urbanismo is translated as The City of Tomorrow. So they are all famous books. There were 28 issues of Le Esprit Nouveau altogether, and the one that you see, the book that you see on the far right, the Almanac, in fact, was Le Esprit Nouveau number 29, which in the end was never published, and Le Corbusier collected it as a special book again. So you have a very modern thing here going on, this thing of having a magazine that you have several articles and then you collect them in books, much as what is happening today with publications, where it seems that nobody is able any longer to write a book, but they write all these articles and then they collect them together. So we are fully into a very modern thing about publication, complete exploitation of everything ever written, right? So let me show now some of the catalogs and publicity brochures that Le Corbusier was collecting during these years of Le Esprit Nouveau. There were, of course, as you may imagine, automobiles. Le Corbusier can never be separated from cars. Boissan, Peugeot, Citroën, Delas, all these catalogs, he collected all of them, right? There were also catalogs and photographs of aeroplanes, like this is are taken from a catalog of Farman aeroplanes. There were also seaplanes from the companies like Caproni. And here you can start seeing things, like, for example, this horizontal window in the Caproni seaplane, because what is interesting is that some formal ideas come, I think, from these early things. But also something that you can start seeing here is how interesting publicity was becoming during these years. I mean, if you compare it with the publicity of the late 19th century, for example, they were using photographs, very good quality photographs, and that make them very, very appealing. There were also suitcases from the company Innovation, and there were also Hermès bags. This is a catalog from Hermès, and then on the right you have the arrangement of some of these objects on the page for its publication in L'Art Décoratif d'Aujourd'hui. And there were filing cabinets from Romeo, and there were Omega watches, and there were all these objects, all these products that we have, that we tend to associate with Le Corbusier. But also there were a series of other, if you want, more extravagant, more weird things, such as turbines from the Brown Bowery Company, centrifugal ventilators from the company Rateau, and of course you can already start seeing things. For example, the ventilator on the right that has been taken from this catalog is the same one that Le Corbusier will use opposite the page Architecture or Revolution in his book Versin Architecture. So you can start seeing that he is going to be using these images, of course. Then there is some catalogs of industrial equipment, like these ones from the companies Clermont, Ferrand, and Slingsby. And also here you can start seeing things like, for example, the time of your workers is your money, things that are very much in the ideology of Le Corbusier. Now, Le Corbusier, as I said before, went very much out of his way to get these materials. He was constantly writing to companies to get them. Along with the catalogs, he collected department store brochures, like those from the company of Bon Marché, but also from Brantham, La Samaritaine, etc., etc. And on the right, you have a photograph of the decorative art of today, where you can see how some of these images are making it into his books. He also collected clippings from newspapers and magazines such as the Autocar, Le Petit Journal, and a number of others. And sometimes he even draws on them. Like you can see here, he's comparing the size of a street in Paris with that of an ocean liner and making a point of that. All right, let me see more clippings. The airport on the roof of a station. You see also how much of what we consider Le Corbusier themes are, in fact, you start seeing through these clippings how much some of these revolutionary things that we think are part of these avant-garde architects were really very much in the popular imagination already. In any event, Le Corbusier seems to have collected every image that struck him, from postcards to the cover of this child's school notebook, which is illustrating the primary volumes, the basic geometric volumes. Often there are notes accompanying these images. Like in the back of this image, he writes this thing: "This is printed in all school notebooks in France. Geometry is at the base. It is in our language, etc., etc." And later, he will use this image in his books, and often some of these comments that are kind of extemporary comments written on the images taken from catalogs will become full sentences in his books. So this is the way in which he is working. Now, Le Corbusier, or this material, this everyday image of industrial life, are, of course, the source of many illustrations in L'Esprit Nouveau, articles, and in the books that he published afterwards. Particularly the illustrations in the book, The Decorative Art of Today, especially come from this so-called, or we can call it, disposable material. In this book, which is now translated, as I say, images from department store catalog, industrial publicity, and newspaper alternate with ones that are taken from art history books. Now, how much Le Corbusier was after these images is manifest, I think, in this entire page in L'Art Décoratif d'Aujourd'hui, which is devoted to a photograph that he never got in time for publication. And here is the story of his bureaucratic troubles. He sees this beautiful lamp in a fair in Paris, and he writes to the company, and he telephones, and he gets there, and the Esprit Nouveau is about to come, and they never get the picture in time, and it's all about how much the industrialists don't really understand anything. And on the right is an image of the lamp that I found in the archives that I think is precisely the image that in the end that he was looking for and in the end may have arrived, but somewhat too late. Now, Le Corbusier's arguments in L'Esprit Nouveau rely, of course, on the juxtaposition of images and text. He does not use the image in a representational way to illustrate the text, and there are examples of that. For example, he uses airplanes, and which were very popular images at that time, but he's talking about mass production of houses. The arguments of Le Corbusier, therefore, are to be understood in terms of this somehow never-resolved collision between image and text. And in that, one can clearly see the influence of advertising techniques, the association of ideas that can be produced precisely through the juxtaposition of images with images, of images with text. I always like this example of the Ratto catalog, that the image that you saw before that now makes it into the double page spread of the Architecture and Revolution chapter. Because, of course, the ventilator is a pun on the meaning of revolution in a literal sense, revolution, mechanical revolution, but also on industrial revolution. But then if you read inside, you find passages in the chapter that read as follows. Modern society does not pay its intellectuals in a fair way, but it still tolerates the old arrangements as to property, which are a serious barrier to transforming the town or the house. So what Le Corbusier is defending here is public property and the need to address the housing problem, directing his critique, that is, where a revolution in the position of the architect in an industrial society is at stake. So it's not so much to do with social revolution, but with a revolution in the profession of the architecture. Now, the imagery derived from advertising is clearly much more pervasive in L'Esprit Nouveau and in all the books coming out of L'Esprit Nouveau than that coming from strictly architectural sources. For example, Le Corbusier borrowed a photograph of the American silos from the Gropius article on the Bourbon Yearbook of 1913. And this is the only example that we have had so far, everybody referring to it. Why is it? Precisely because it's an image that was taken from another avant-garde publication. Now, what is interesting here is that even in this very example that we know all the details about it, because everything seems to have picked on it, the Gropius borrowing, and somehow the subsequent traveling of this image through the avant-garde journals, ironically enough, can also be read as a media phenomena. Look, first, this is the image on the left, is the image of the Bourbon, of the article of Gropius. And on the right is the image as published in L'Esprit Nouveau. And you will notice, and many people have pointed out to that, that he cleaned it, right? He gets rid of everything that gets on his way to demonstrate that this is a real modern structure. But look at what happens. I'm not so interested in that. What I'm interested in is that now the image travels as it is, transformed, fixed, from the L'Esprit Nouveau to the steel, right? And there is some correspondence in the archives where Le Corbusier is reprimanding Van Desburg for not crediting L'Esprit Nouveau, being L'Esprit Nouveau the first one to have borrowed the picture, of course, from the Bourbon. And then it goes again into a series of avant-garde publications, including some book by Kasak and Moholy Nagy, the magazine Ma, and a number of other publications. But as Rainer Bauhan pointed out, none of these architects had ever seen the silos in question. So definitely we could call this event, we could call this an instance of a media phenomenon. However, beyond this rather, as I say, isolated instance, which paradoxically is the only one we know everything about it, what the heterodox material in the pages of L'Esprit Nouveau suggests is precisely a shift in the conventional understanding of that journal. This shift is from an internal exchange among the avant-garde movement, which is the one that we had been insisted on so far, as if these avant-garde people were all enclosed in some sort of a magic circle, uncontaminated by the materials of low culture, to a dialogue with a new emerging reality, which is the culture of advertisement and mass media. And this is the shift in which I'm interested. It's not so much about the exchanges between the avant-garde figures, it's about this new kind of dialogue with a new culture, which is the culture and of the media. Now, the media, as you know, were born in the technical revolution of the years of World War I, in the same way that the automobiles and airplanes had emerged from the pre-war revolution. By the way, here you have an image of a radiola, an advertisement of a radiola that is a clipping that Le Corbusier kept in his archives. And on the right you have Ocean Fan playing also with the materials of the media, I guess. Now, after the war, this technology, this media technology, was gradually domesticated, as you know, and as regular airplane services was established throughout Europe, radios and telecommunications became also household items by the beginning of the 20s. The media is, of course, war technology. Perhaps you can lower that a little bit so that we can see. No, the other way around. Yeah, right. La Ilustración. Perfect. Here are some images from La Ilustración. La Ilustración is an illustrated newspaper that Le Corbusier was buying and was collecting and was clipping things, right? And actually, you can see that some of the images, like that wing of the Farman plane over there, are coincide with some of the images that Le Corbusier will use in his own books. Now, the media, as I say, is world technology. What made possible precisely the involvement of so many distant countries in World War I was communication, which bridged the distance between the battlefield and the places the news were being transmitted to, the distance that is between the fighting and the decision-making. Here you have, on the left, the equipment of a French soldier during the war, also published in La Ilustración. And here you have, on the right, the arrangement of Hermès bags that he had cut from the catalogue that I showed you before of Hermès, and they are now arranged in the place, in the page, again for its publication in L'Art Décoratif d'Aujourd'hui. Now, in many ways here, we can start to see a lot of things, including that the man of Le Corbusier, this new modern individual, is first of all a nomadic man, is somebody who can carry his objects to any place, but also in relation to this image that is very much of his time and that no doubt he knew, there is something else which perhaps one can anticipate, which is the idea that the modern individual is also a soldier, and I will get back to this idea later. Now, in contrast to the attention or to the amount of attention that criticism has paid on Le Corbusier and the culture of the machine age, very little has been done on architecture and the new means of communication. Now, from the point of view of criticism, the context of the machine age has served the purpose of sustaining precisely the myth of the modern movement as an autonomous artistic practice, and of the architect as somewhat interpreted of the new industrial reality. Now, let me use a few images to illustrate this point. Here you have, on the left, a Farman catalog, and in that, an image he had selected to head the chapter Eyes Which Do Not See in Versina Citetur. So you have the catalog, the image that is pointed out, and then even a sketch with the image, right? And now we have the image that made its way now into the eyes which do not see in the chapter of Versina Architecture. And of course, before that, as I say, in the article in L'Esprit Nouveau. But in fact, what is interesting here is that in that chapter, where Le Corbusier is illustrating it with. I should go back there, because that's not yet the point. He's in fact talking about mass production of houses. He's not talking about airplanes at all. So there are two things here. First is that Le Corbusier is showing airplanes and talking about the mass production houses. That is, he's grabbing the attention of his readers through their eyes to talk then about what is important for him, which is the mass production of houses. And this is a very well-known publicity technique. You grab the attention of the readers to something that was so fascinating in the 20s as airplanes, and then you talk about mass production of houses. And the second thing is that this was not at all some imagination of Le Corbusier, some imaginary thing that he would get Voisin to really produce, to mass produce houses. But on the contrary, the company Voisin, even before Le Corbusier, at the end of the war, was very much trying to break precisely into the building industry to keep its plant occupied. And in an article, Voisin produced, by the way, two prototypes of houses that were published in an article in Les Prix Nouveaux, Les Maisons Voisin, you can see here, where Le Corbusier and Ozan Fan write, "Impossible to wait on the slow collaboration of the successive efforts of excavator, mason, carpenter, joiner, tiler, plumber. Houses must go up all of a piece, made by a machine, by machine tools in factory, assembled as Ford assembles cars on moving conveyor belts. Aviation is achieving prodigies of serial production. It is in aircraft factories that the soldier architect, have decided to build the houses. They decided to build this house like an aircraft with the same structural methods, lightweight framing, metal braces, tubular supports." End of the quote. Now, Le Corbusier is concerned with the contemporary conditions of production is, of course, necessarily a concern with the mechanisms that sustain that production, that is, advertising, mass media, and publicity. The images of the aeroplanes that he was deploying were very much part, as I said before, of the popular imagination. Illustrated newspapers, for example, move from the fetishistic display of images of aircraft in war, as we saw before in Illustration, to images of the new passenger aircraft, such that around 1919 these images appear side by side. Le Corbusier was employing, therefore, modern publicity techniques. On the one hand, he grabs the reader's visual attention to the spectacular image to direct them to the concept he's promoting. On the other hand, subliminally inscribed between the images he chooses is the domestication of military technology. In these terms, Le Corbusier not only did have an intuitive understanding of the media and a definite feel for news, as Marie-Odile Briot has written in one of the few existing comments on Le Corbusier and the media, but purist culture, you can argue, which is purist culture, by this I mean Le Corbusier's and Ozan Fan's project of arriving to a theory of culture in industrial life, everyday life, to the pages of Les Prix Nouveaux, that was their project. This purist culture can be read as a reflection in both the specular and intellectual sense of the war on the culture of the new means of communication, the world of advertising and mass media. Now, to this first meaning of the word reflection, Le Corbusier's use of mass media culture of the everyday images of the press, industrial publicity, department store mail order catalogs, an advertisement as, if you want, ready-made to be incorporated into his editorial work. But there is more, and this is where the second meaning of the word reflection comes in. Le Corbusier identified in the very existence of the printed media, an important conceptual shift regarding the function of culture and the perception of the exterior world by the modern individual. In L'Art Décoratif d'aujourd'hui, he writes, "The fabulous development of the book, of print, and the classification of the whole of the most recent archaeological era has flooded our minds and overwhelmed us. We are in a completely new situation. Everything is known to us." Now, this new condition in which we know everything about everything, of course, represents a critical transformation of traditional culture. Paradoxically, the classical humanist accumulation of knowledge becomes problematic. Now, one of the ways in which you can see this, in which way this becomes problematic with Le Corbusier is when he starts talking about the transformation in the role of art. He writes, "The role of art in society," he wrote that the role of art in society had also been radically, radically altered by the existence of the mass media. In La Décorative d'Aujourd'hui, he writes, "Now broadly disseminated through books in the schools, newspapers, and at the cinema is the linguistic form of our emotions, which in the centuries prior to our own found expression in the arts." And in the introduction to La Peinture Moderne, he writes, again with Ossian Fan, "Imitative art has been left behind by photography and cinema. The press and the book operate much more efficiently than art relative to religious, moral, or political aims. What is the destiny of art today?" So I'm going to leave you here with this question about art before I move into my second part. Here are two images from Ossian Fan, Foundations of Modern Art, which is making the same point about the how ridiculous it is to still continue with this kind of representational painting. I think Le Corbusier was even more radical when he says that that medium in which we once express our feelings is no longer possible to do that. I mean, the art has to be changed because it's no longer that medium. It is in the book, it is in the cinema, is it in newspapers? We can no longer express ourselves in art. Anyway, with this I would like to move now into the question of Le Corbusier himself as publicist. In which way did he not only incorporate these images into his text and that way affected his understanding of publication, but also in which way he became a publicist himself through this experience of L'Esprit Nouveau magazine. So let's say, let's call it something like Le Corbusier as publicist or something. And here you have L'Esprit Nouveau, a publicity brochure that he sent to industrialists hoping to get advertising contracts. You have to understand one thing very important, that Ossian Fan and Dermé, when he was, still was there, were taking care of the more traditional task of editor, right? Well, Le Corbusier, from the beginning, decided that he was going to take care of finances and publicity. That's what he was going to do. Nothing to do with what you consider traditional task of talking with the architects or the writers or collecting that material. He was only interested in that. So, as such, he developed all these publicities to try to get people to advertise in L'Esprit Nouveau. And in this book, in his books and articles, he also borrows the rhetoric and the techniques of persuasion of modern advertising for his own theoretical arguments, and actually manipulates actual advertisements to incorporate his own vision, as you will see. He does, in this way, he blurs the distinction, the limits between text and publicity. And he does this consciously, arguing that in this way persuasion is most effective. He writes, for example, in this catalog, "L'Esprit Nouveau," he announces, "is read calmly. You surprise your client into calmness, distant from business, far from business, and he listens to you because he doesn't know you're going to solicit him." So an example of this is this advertisement of Leopold Leith, right? And you have a photograph of L'Esprit Nouveau pavilion. So the meaning of what he's trying to say is that there is this architects that will be reading architects, right, in this particular case, that will be reading the magazine, that will be attracted to the advertisement because there is an image of L'Esprit Nouveau, but in the meantime they are reading Leopold Leith, so they are likely to think that this is a good thing to use for their architecture. Now, in obtaining these advertising contracts, Le Corbusier often reversed the usual procedure. And once he had incorporated images from industrial catalogs in his articles, or even published actual advertisements in the review, then he would send a copy to this advertisement to the company with a letter and request payment for this somehow free publicity that the company was receiving. Or he will request that they will commission a publicity for the catalog. And here you have, for example, some of these things that he is incorporating, and then he will write, oh, this is the other way around. He will write to the company and say, look, we are advertising your things. But of course, he will kind of wrap it up in his rhetoric by saying things like, the product has been singled out as being representative of the spirit of the times and things like that. Now, the strategy was not always effective. You have companies like Moinad, that is bags and so on, who writes back to the Enlebagas, Moinad, thank L'Esprit administration very much for the free publicity given to them in issues 11 and 13, but we cannot commit ourselves for the moment to an advertising contract. Now, but in some cases, which is what is interesting, so with the company, for example, Innovation, Le Corbusier not only obtained an advertising contract for L'Esprit Nouveau, but a commission, actually, to redesign and publish its catalogue. So now you have Le Corbusier doing publicity catalogues for these companies. This type of commission, who he also pursued with other companies, such as Ingersoll, Rand, and Roneo, was part of a wider project conceived by Le Corbusier as special catalogues L'Esprit Nouveau, and he writes about them in the following terms. We have thus conceived of a kind of publicity that is almost editorial, but it can only be applied, this is evident, to products whose fabrication and use are consistent with a certain Esprit Nouveau. L'Esprit Nouveau itself will comment on the product of the advertising firm, and with respect to the clientele, this will certainly have an effectiveness that is far different from ordinary publicity. So, as you can see, he was fully aware of what he was doing. This is some drafts from in preparation for this brochure, publicity brochure for the company Innovation. Now, the deal is the following. The company was to have a complete page with a different text and illustration published in each issue of L'Esprit Nouveau for a year, and at the end of the year, the 12 pages that he had collected in that way will be then printed, he says, in an edition of 3,000 or more on fine paper put together to form a brochure or catalogue called L'Esprit Nouveau, which the advertising firm then will be able to distribute usefully to a certain segment of his clientele. So there you go, Le Corbusier designing and producing these catalogues. And here is what happens. The Innovation's first pages of editorial publicity appear in L'Esprit Nouveau number 18, you have here on the right. And on the left, you have a conventional text of an Innovation catalogue, where it reads, literally, an Innovation armoire holds three times as much as an ordinary armoire. It makes order, avoids unnecessary faults. And instead of that, in the next one, you cannot read now, but it reads something like, construction in series is necessary to setting up house. And this is followed by another advertisement in L'Esprit Nouveau, which reads, to construct in series is to dedicate oneself to the pursuit of the element. By analyzing the element, one arrives at a standard. We must establish the standards of construction, windows, doors, plant, distribution, and all the interior mechanics that modern man requires for his comfort and hygiene. Now, you see, this is nothing to do with you're already getting it. This is nothing to do with innovation, right? Tone seems to somehow intensify progressively until we get to this double-page advertisement in L'Esprit Nouveau number 20, which again is which is shaped like an hourglass, and here starts with the following thing. You can read it still up there. The war has shaken us out of our torpor. Taylorism has been spoken of and achieved. But throughout these pages, you cannot find any specific reference to innovation products. So you see, again, the blurring of the limits between advertising and publicity. He is using advertising images from products inside the text, and when he is designing actual advertisement, you cannot tell the difference between the text of this advertisement and some of the other things that he's writing for his own purposes. Now, another publicity strategy that was deployed by Le Corbusier includes the portrayal, as we saw before, too, of his own work in actual advertisement, as often as occurs, for example, here in this case, where he, in this advertisement of Sumer, he is using this photograph of La Rose. Sometimes an image of a built work by the architect is placed in the advertisement of a company that was involved in the construction, like Samar, Eubolis, we saw before, and others. And This is clearly a strategy that goes back to the point of a publicity that is really clearly addressed for a targeted group, which is architects. And this is a very, very modern concept, something that was developed in the 20s, the idea that advertisement will be addressed to a target.